Welcome to the Valley Outdoors. Glad to have you guys with us this week. Lots of things to talk about today. We're going to be talking a little bit about the National Walleye Tour update, what happened at that event, and who won, and what exactly was caught. We're going to talk a little bit about anglers catching a world record gar, and you're not going to believe on what pound test. Those stories and more when we return. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Hey, Ava.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going pretty darn good, actually. Had a good week.
Yeah.
Rolling into the weekend.
You did some deck work?
I did deck work, yep.
Nothing. That's awesome.
Not dock work, deck work. So my fall will be freed up to enjoy the on-water and in-field experiences, as the saying goes.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Don is off gallivanting somewhere. I don't know where that is.
He's in his favorite place.
I think so. Wherever that might be.
Well, we cannot reveal.
No, we cannot reveal that.
At this moment.
But he's enjoying whatever it is. So, which is a good thing. Last week, I teased it at the intro. Last week, we were talking about what was happening with the National Walleye Tour.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Some people got in trouble, but how much trouble did they get into?
This, I will tell you what, my phone blew up this last week. In fact, last weekend, while the event was going on, after we did our show, it was because there was conversation all weekend. It was just
I'm sure
off the charts. Well, apparently, what's happened is the guilty party was docked 7 pounds of weight. And so, let me back up. Let's back up. If you haven't heard, there was an event for the National Walleye Tour that went on up at Sault Ste. Marie. Sault Ste. Marie borders Canadian waters. There's regulations in Canada that you're only allowed 4 fish and from this area, and the NWT limit is 5. The angler in question, in this particular case, I haven't talked about last week, it's out there. So Max Wilson, who won the event, was fishing in that area. Long story somewhat shorter. In Canada, you cannot party fish, meaning if you catch fish in your boat, each person must catch their limit. So if you're allowed 4 fish, which is 2 per person, that must be the 2 per person limit.
Right.
That's it. If the other person does not catch one, you cannot take the 2-person limit and have the other guy catch those 2
fish.
Right.
It doesn't matter how many people are in the boat. Your
Each
limit
person
is your
is
limit.
Your, yeah.
Right.
2 fish is it.
Yep.
Well, what happened was Max apparently was not aware, which I find hard to believe, but that's just my personal opinion, that the... Because every tournament, you have to know what the rules are. If you don't, you're responsible for it in that particular case. So what ends up happening, he didn't tell anybody until the week Monday before the tournament or in that time frame that he said, because there's a lot of conversation going on, that there was something that went awry and that, yes, he did fish in that area and, yes, he did catch his fish there. In fact, he caught apparently... As the story is, he caught all 5 fish in Canadian waters. So the conversation has been, now was it appropriate for the National Walleye Tour, and it's run by Robert Cartledge and that particular group, they also run the MWC, was it appropriate for them to just say, well, we're going to take 7 pounds off of his weight and then 7 pounds off of another gentleman, Isaac Lakich? You know, he's a good guy. I've never seen him have any issues in the tour ever. And they took 7 pounds off of both of them just because they saw one person catch a 7-pounder. That's the justification that they had given everyone.
Okay.
Major uproar amongst the anglers, and there's lots of letters being written. The reason is this, and this is, put this out there, I'm not going to give you my opinion one way or the other. Let you guys, if you want to comment, feel free. Comment on thevalleyoutdoors.com. We got our website. And throw some comments out there. We'll take all and see if we can answer if anybody has any questions. But what happened is they docked him 7 pounds. One individual that was in third or fourth, third place bumped up to second place, so that changed one place, but they weren't disqualified. And that's what everyone is in up in arms about, because somebody cheated on the tour, and they said it wasn't cheating. They called it an unintentional rules violation. So whether or not it's unintentional doesn't matter from the rule standpoint. That was rule number 17. And then it kind of raises the question, what do you do at that point? Apparently now the case is closed, but there's no teeth in the enforcement, which is one of those things. Good, bad, or different, I'm not going to say what my opinion is. The other issue came to light as well, as there was a photo that surfaced on the internet. Apparently someone who was the prime violator decided to flip off the camera with both hands in pockets. So it turned into a disgruntled mess, and it was very disappointing from my standpoint and a lot of others that were involved with it. But to each his own. Give us your opinion. It's a hot topic, I will tell you right now. Unfortunately, I can't comment on the website for the National Walleye Tour because they delete every comment that's come up on it. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. It's a major damage control situation right now. And I'll be vocal enough about it just to say, let's talk about it, because I've fished that tour for 21 years and still plan on fishing it down the road if they clean up their act. This non-enforcement scenario, I think, is a bit of a confusing thing. And congrats to John Hoyer. Move on to the plus. Congrats to John Hoyer, Angler of the Year and winner of the event. He just rocked it, absolutely rocked it. And it was using forward-looking sonar, which is a topic we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Dominated, never 39 pounds a day, or for a couple days, 3 days. Never before has that lake ever had that type of weight come out of it. So cheers to John Hoyer. Unfortunately, a little cloud hanging over it, but nonetheless, hey, let's make some comments. TheValleyOutdoors.com. And we will be back, talk a little bit about deer and CW testing. Who knows what else? We'll be right back. Hey, Ava.
How's it going?
We're back again. How about that?
You know, it felt like forever, but we're back here.
Seemed like just yesterday.
That break was long, man.
Make sure you check us out on Facebook and
TheValleyOutdoors.com. Hey, I was ramping down music. I'm doing my job over here.
I'm going to hang that out there no matter what anyway.
Hey, I got it, though.
You picked up on it, which is not a bad thing. You've heard of CWD, right?
Yes,
chronic wasting disease.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. And in the state of Minnesota, it's a big thing. Obviously, anywhere in the Midwest, in fact, across the country, it is as well. And if you're looking in Minnesota, the archery season's coming up. We're having a little archery commentary later on in the show about Michigan and some numbers for deer. You might want to stick around for that. So that'll be kind of cool. But getting your deer registered, or I should say tested for CWD during the Minnesota archery season, which is coming right up. It is a mail-in kit. You need to request one before hunting or utilize any kits obtained but not used last year. That works. Hunters may participate in the partner sampling program. Hunters can also make an appointment to have their deer sampled by at the Minnesota DNR Area Wildlife Offices. And contact information can be on our website, so you can check it out at the TheValleyOutdoors.com.
Yeah.
Punch it up for the DNR website.
Make it easy for you.
Deer hunters are required to have their deer 1 year old or older sampled for CWD in all CWD management and surveillance zones during the opening weekend of the firearm A season, meaning A is the letter A, November 4th through the 5th. Hunters should know the DPA number of the area they plan to hunt prior to buying a license and ensure they understand CWD regs and sampling options for that particular area. Archery hunters can use the DPA lookup tool on the DNR website, make a plan for the deer season webpage. That's a webpage that says make a plan for deer season to check if the DPA they plan to hunt has carcass movement restrictions or has deer feeding or attractant bans in place, because there will be restrictions. You cannot move the full carcass. That's a big thing from one zone to the next.
Right.
If that is in place, also deer attractants, because you can have doe estrus, and doe estrus is a potential carrier for CWD. So you need to make sure what zones have that allowed and what ones do not.
Gotcha.
And kind of a sad thing, but trying to keep track of it and minimize the impact that goes along with that. Hey, did you see the deal on a lot of the news stories about a bear camera saving an Alaska hiker's life?
A bear camera? Like a trail cam?
Yeah, but it's used to watch bears.
Okay, yeah.
This is a cool story. People logged on to hoping to see brown bears gorging on salmon, fattening themselves up for their winter hibernation. Instead, what the wildlife enthusiast viewed was one of Alaska's most remote national park webcams, and what they saw was a disheveled and weather-beaten hiker shuffling into view, mouthing the words, "Help me," into the lens. The episode, captured by a camera in the Katmai National Park, sparked a chain of events that ended with a safe recovery of the unknown hiker and search and rescue teams, according to the rangers.
Oh, wonderful. Good.
Dedicated bear cam fans alerted us to a man in distress on Dumpling Mountain. The heroic rangers sprung into action and mounted a search, saving the man. Explore.org, the company that operates webcams for the U.S. National Park Service, posted to Twitter or X, "Bear cam saves hiker's life." The NPS spokesperson told the Washington Post recently that the comments left in the chat room by web viewers alerting Explore.org to the distressed hiker were forwarded to the authorities in Alaska, who scrambled into action. The park sent search and rescue teams to find the hiker, who was caught in a windy and rainy conditions of poor visibility. Apparently, when I was looking at it, it was fog. I mean, it was thick.
And that's when they found him in that? Or was that the picture?
He wandered up to the camera at that point.
Okay, gotcha.
And they first spotted the hiker and posted the alerts. Were also able to watch rescue personnel disappearing into the mist on their way to find him.
Ugh.
So, yeah, and it gets even better. This is kind of a, I mean, this is really cool. The camera is in a park, 6,400 square mile park on coastal West Alaska, featuring volcanoes and tundra. Competition that they held in this particular area about, it's called Fat Bear Week. So people watch the camera and vote for the fattest bear, favorite bear.
All right.
So kind of odd. When the hiker was spotted, only a handful of people were online, making it even more remarkable. So the number was like 15 people were online. That was it. And when it was 19 people that were watching the live feed. Nobody knows who the hiker is. They haven't identified it. I should say nobody's had it released to the press. He was found close to the camera, unknown if he was able to hear the message that was sent by authorities to the camera's loudspeaker advising him to stay in place. So they had a speaker on this deal.
Wow.
It was a first for Bear Cam fans for sure, he said, of the naturalist and founder of Fat Bear Week. The weather up there is really poor that day, about 50-foot visibility, and the weather on the top of the mountain is often much worse than you find across the river. Wow. That's, you know, and so that really throws something out there to say maybe that's an opportunity to have other cameras in areas that people may find themselves in trouble.
People have found missing people on their trail cams and stuff, you know. And
there was no cell phone coverage.
Right.
Go figure that out. How does that work?
I don't know.
It's a special transmitter. Very special transmitter. I'll tell you what, we're going to be right back. We're going to talk a little bit when you get back. We've got a potential world record gar. I'm not going to tell you the pound test that he caught this thing on, but the fish is over 270 some pounds. You're not going to believe what pound test. Hang tight. Be right back.
Does your family need a break from the daily routine?
Hello, I'm Dr. Spruce. If you or someone you know needs a healthy dose of nature, visit discovertheforest.org and trade in the big screen for the big blue sky by visiting a local park or forest near you.
Hiking, picnicking, swimming, orienteering, climbing, admiring wildlife, or inhaling fresh air may result in heightened creativity, feelings of joy, harmony, satisfaction, and a euphoria that can only be explained as oneness with the natural world. Whoa.
So, Ava, how much would you like to have that? I mean, that kind of a trail cam thing would be pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy it worked out.
I didn't know they had trail cams
with
speakers in them.
With microphones on them. Me neither.
Well, I don't think it's speaker. Or, I mean, I don't think it's a microphone. I think it's just a speaker.
Right.
I think it's a one-way.
Well, I know lots of trail cams do have microphones.
Sound?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
What a cool thought, though.
I mean, instead of taking a picture, it takes video.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
See what I'm saying?
I know they take video, but I don't know. Apparently, because he mouthed into the camera, help me. Whether or not he knew that he had.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, or maybe.
But it was smart of him to stick around the webcam or the camera because they know where that's at. Don't leave. Don't keep trying to. Yeah, I would stick around there for a while.
That's the problem with people that get lost. They keep wandering, trying to find, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a tough gig. But it ended on a good note. That's just kind of cool. Another good note, we highlighted it before we went to break. An angler catches a potential world record gar. Now, before I tell you the pound test, I'm going to hold you still in suspense. A Kentucky angler and a Texas fishing guide, they teamed up to catch a 283-pound alligator gar in Sam Rayburn Lake that could break an International Game Fish Association, the IGFA, which is the governing body to establish any line class records. That's the world record for the species. It stood for 72 years. And get this, Ava, 6-pound test.
How, though? How?
I don't know. Angler Art Weston is a record chaser with dozens of IGFA entries to his name, including 6 line class records for alligator gar that are either approved or pending. Among the most recent, a 251-pounder caught on the Trinity River, which is currently undergoing review in the 80-pound line class category. On September 2nd, he was one It was on day one of a week-long trip he booked with Kirk Kirkland aboard the Garfish Enterprise. Yeah, isn't that great? Garfish Enterprise, yep. To target some additional line class records, the accomplished Gar Guide has identified a spot on the East Texas Lake north of Beaumont. You ever been to Beaumont?
No.
And think about Beaumont when you land and you drive. If you don't like the smell, just wait. About 30 seconds, it'll change.
Interesting.
It's gross. It's not pleasant.
All right.
It's all oil refinery. But anyway, they offered a sandy bottom in that particular area with minimal snags. They hooked two fish, including a 169-pounder, before the big one hit. He fought the fish for more than 2 hours, careful not to put too much pressure on the light line. Before he was able to glimpse the leader tip below the water surface, took him another 20 minutes to inch the fish closer to the boat. Weston told one of the news reporters, he said, I said, look, she's coming up. And he said, I remember yelling, oh, my God, that's a monster. And this is after landing a 250-pound gar last April. You've never seen a gar this big before. And in the Facebook post, he reported that the gar measured 100 inches long, 48-inch girth.
Ick.
4 feet. Called the record the holy grail of the fishing world. What an accomplishment. Lots of blood, sweat, and tears. And broken line went into this achievement. The angler and world record chaser Art Weston and I did what no other alligator gar angler has been able to accomplish in 72 years. Catch a fish bigger than the all-tackle world record set so many years ago on the banks of the Rio Grande River. Indeed, the record set in 1951 by Bill Balverde has achieved almost mythic status in Texas fishing lore. The World War II veteran was said to have caught the gar with a homemade bamboo rod baited with mullet while targeting catfish. Not only did the catch top the IGFA's list for nearly three quarters of a century, it's the heaviest documented freshwater fish ever taken on rod and reel in Texas.
Wow.
And the state's longest standing freshwater rod and reel record. The fish was to measure 93 inches long, 279 pounds when weighed at a local market. After he drove home with the fish tied to a spare tire, its tail dragging the whole way. Oh, my goodness. You want to talk about crazy?
Yeah, no kidding.
Here's another story you're going to love. I thought it was, in my mind, it's great. It just thinks of what's coming. 24 inches of snow is expected in Colorado.
Eric, go home.
The end of this week and into next week, up to the 17th. I'm not joking.
Sir.
Colorado Springs residents can look to the west. Cameras in the mountains, the 14-foot summit. They're looking at, there's coatings of snow on it now. The most recent round of snow is only the start of a powdery week on the peak, as the saying goes. Snow is expected to fall every single day in Pikes Peak through this coming Sunday, which will be tomorrow. And, total, they're supposed to get about 24 inches total through the 17th. Double what's expected compared to a live forecast published the same service last week. I love that.
Of course you do.
What can I say? It's good.
Hey, I still got to have,
no.
Fall.
I know.
That's the best.
I figured
fall only lasts for 2 weeks anyway.
I know. I love fall. I do. I do. I really do. Real quick, kind of a nice little story to wrap things up. Michigan whitetail numbers are in solid shape as archery hunters prepare for the October 1st opener. When the 2023 archery season opens, half hour before sunrise on October 1, bow hunters can expect a pretty good chance of tagging a whitetail, especially in the Lower Peninsula, according to the DNR Big Game Managers. Like previous years, our archery season is shaping up to be a good one across much of the state. Deer numbers remain high, with very few exceptions in the SLP. The hunters with access should be able to set up on deer sign and have activity on many of their hunts. The DNR deer, elk, and moose specialist told Michigan Outdoor News, access can be a wild card in the SLP since 90% of the deer range is privately owned. See, that's the tough part.
Yeah.
It makes it difficult. Same can largely be said for the Northern Lower Peninsula. The SLP stands for Southern Lower Peninsula. Deer numbers in many areas on the Northern Lower Peninsula remain high across much of the range. Public land may experience lower numbers in some locations, making success more difficult. The UP is really a variable depending on where you're at. Certainly, if you're in the South Central, where the numbers are higher, you can expect good success. And then many of the hunters in the NLP, Northern Lower Peninsula. As you head further north in UP, numbers thin out, while success is certainly a possibility. Who knows? Last fall, 276,500 bow hunters hit the woods in Michigan, combined to tag 104,800 deer, 31% of the state's overall deer harvest. So that's pretty strong numbers. Of the total, 71,000 were antlered and 33,000 were antlerless. Hmm. So kind of a 75% mix right there.
Have you gotten any numbers in our region?
Nope.
Southern Minnesota yet?
Nope. Haven't got those, what they're looking at. We did that earlier, I think. We did cover a little bit of a deer population, but we'll be looking for that pretty quick here. So
awesome. Looking forward to it. I got to sit in my stand and take my camera out. Saw four doe come by me.
When was this?
Just a couple weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
I got a good photo of one of them.
Did you?
They knew I was there, but didn't know where. And they didn't scurry off. So.
You can't make deer sticks out of a photo, just to let you know.
That's very true.
I'll tell you what, we are the Valley Outdoors. I'm Eric for Ava and myself. And Don, wherever he may be, hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. Join us next week. We're out of here. See ya.